Hi, welcome to the latest episode of the Rust Games Development Podcast. I have the great honor of chatting to Fedor Logoshov, the creator of the MacroQuad Games Engine. Why don't you introduce yourself, Fedor?
Hello. I'm Fedor. I came to Rust about 5 years ago, and before that I worked in big game development companies, mostly with Unity, C Sharp, and stuff like that. I shipped couple of games, like at least two relatively big games, and then I found out about Rust, and I came to Rust, and I was really happy about it. I came to Rust at the very beginning, I think about Rust 1.0, I think, and there was not much of engines available, so I made my own, and I made my own relatively big game. I made a relatively big three-dimensional shooter game with a lot of things in it. I shipped that game. It was released on Itch, and it was like more or less complete game, but it was not really a great game. It was kind of cool demo for Rust and for Engine, but it was not really fun to play, so I did not really make a lot of money out of it. And that's how my journey in Rust started. I worked on a big game and then realized that I need to do something else after that game. And then I eventually end up doing MiniQuad, MacroQuad, and all the open source stuff.
That's really cool. Yes, yeah, so did you come from a background, just in terms of your programming languages, you come from C, C++, or I take it like you use C# with
I did a
Unity.
Little. Of C++ and C, but most of my background in games was with Unity and C#. Yes.
So what were some of the challenges that you kind of faced when learning Rust? Was there any that you sort of come across that were hard to grok, or was it quite straightforward?
It was relatively straightforward. The main problems was that I started to do Rust when it was really young, at Rust 1.0, so there was not much of libraries, not much of established techniques and guidelines about how to write Rust. So I needed to invent a lot of things by myself, and it was super fun, but quite challenging. So that was a little bit of a problem. The language itself was really nice, even back then. I really enjoyed that I can do a lot of things safely without worrying about memory corruptions and all that stuff. It was really good.
I think it's something I really love about the Rust community is there's this whole thought process that the attitude that it's not just because tools don't exist right now, I'm not going to use this, but actually there's this kind of tinkerer mindset that if something doesn't exist, I'll just go and create it myself. And we've seen over the past few years some really great libraries and technologies coming out of the Rust games community. Whereas predominantly in the past, we were told, create games, don't create engines. And actually, we've got so many people that are creating so many great supporting libraries. Did MiniQuad and MacroQuad come out of you developing a game, or did you intend to create an engine and then a game?
Kind of. I started with a game. I did a pretty big three-dimensional shooter, and it was just a game. It was not an engine. And it had some small engine, but it was not really usable outside of the game. And it was not Mini MacroQuad. It was it used Gloom, the library that was popular back then, and it was not really connected to MiniQuad and MacroQuad. However, I did plenty of really cool tools for that game, like animation editor or particle editor. And now I'm trying to backport those tools to the new engine to make it actually usable. That's kind of my plan for the how to save some of the legacy from that big game, because it was a lot of cool stuff.
That's really exciting. So What do you feel as some of the strengths of MacroQuad over some of the other engines that people might find in the community? If you've got a games project, you've got an idea, where do you think that MacroQuad and MiniQuad's strengths are for somebody that's just coming into creating a game in Rust?
I think the most important selling point right now that MicroQuad working right away on web. So the web builds are super straightforward and super simple. And we do not need to modify any code base to build on web, also to build on Android and iOS, but it's way less tested. But the web support was the top priority originally in MiniQuad, back in MiniQuad times. Also, I think it's one of the most important things. And all the other things came from MiniQuad, not from MicroQuad itself, but from MiniQuad. Because MicroQuad is actually kind of small library on top of MiniQuad. And MiniQuad is nice because it's really small. It's not much of a code on top of like platform itself, which makes MiniQuad really portable. Like last month, I ran MiniQuad and MicroQuad as well on Linux without like EX, without Wayland, just on KMS, I think it's how it's called. And it was cool. And it was really easy because there was not much of a code going on. It's really easy to support new platform and just tinker around, you know.
Yeah, no, I think like the compile times for MicroQuad and MiniQuad are really, really impressive. I know it's something that the Rust core team have said that like it's something they really want to address in 2021, looking at the survey. And I think actually MicroQuad and MiniQuad have been really great in terms of getting that quite instant feedback from what I've seen. What have been your inspirations behind the library? You know, I know you cite Raylib as an influence. Is that something you've used in the past and you were kind of like, I want to create the Rust version of that? Or is it, are there other influences you've taken on board?
Before going to Raylib, I want to talk a little bit about compile time because I forgot, and it's like one of the main good things about MiniQuad. Compile times are super fast. It's like, I don't know, like 10 times faster than like anything else or even more. And the thing about compile time, like MiniQuad compiles from scratch, from cargo clean in like, I don't know, 2 seconds, 5 seconds, depends on the machine. the important part here is not only compile time itself, but compile time is actually an indication of how much things are compiling. Like, it's not exactly like this, but still it's pretty good indication of how much code is involved on the thing you're compiling. And I really like that in MiniQuad, that just not much of a thing. Like it's not much of a code involved. So when you have some bug, like some really weird platform-dependent bug. Like you have some bug that can be reproduced only on, I don't know, some certain version of Android device, and it's a really weird bug, and you really don't know where to look. With MiniQuad, you do not have much of a choice. Like you do not have much of a code to investigate because you just don't have a lot of code. So it's really easy to locate a problem and do something with it. And that's like really cool about fast compile time.
Yeah, I really like that. Tell us a bit about your influences behind the library itself. I know, as we just said, you cite Raylib as being a big influence of yours. Is that the only influence, or is there things you've taken from Unity or other engines you've used?
I think that for MiniQuad, the main influence was Sokol. It's a C library it's a single header C library for cross-platform graphics. It can do rendering on OpenGL, DirectX, Metal, and like, basically everything on any platform. And originally MiniQuad even used some parts of Sokol, some C parts of Sokol for some platform-dependent stuff. And it still used it for some platforms, only for mobiles right now. So it was like the main influence for MiniQuad. For MicroQuad, originally it was more or less a clone of Raylib and Rust. because I really like the design of Red Leap. I really like the ideas behind Red Leap, so I took a lot. Later on, I started to use Smucker quite a lot for different projects, and I started to add a lot of things that are possible only in Rust, like a lot of async stuff, a lot of Rust-specific stuff, and the library evolved quite a lot from just being Rayleap clone.
That's really cool. Just explain to us the difference between MiniQuad and MacroQuad, because you've got these two projects that you're developing simultaneously. What are the differences between the two engines?
MiniQuad is a really small cross-platform way to originally to draw a quad. That's why it's called MiniQuad. Like I needed to draw a quad the story is that originally I just wanted to help the game called Zemerod to work on web. Like it was built in GGEasy that was not supporting web, and they wanted to help that game to work on web. So and I realized that the only rendering primitive used in the game was quad, rectangle. And I'm like, okay, I need to draw a quad on different platforms. And I made a really small library only for web that was able to draw a quad. And I'm like, okay, now I can draw a quad on web. That's cool. Let's call it mini quad. And that's why it's called like this. And that's basically what it's doing. But later on, it's evolved from just drawing a quad to general purpose graphics API for all kinds of platforms. So MiniQuad is an abstraction on top of right now only OpenGL, but there is a pull request for Metal. So it's an abstraction above graphics API and some other platform-dependent things like file system to do things on different platforms from the same code base. So it's relatively low-level thing, and it allows you to open a window, receive some events, receive some input, and draw some triangles in quite efficient way. So that's what MiniQuad is about.
That's great. And is there plans to support Vulkan in the future? Is that kind of in the pipeline at some point?
What I really want with MiniQuad is support as many devices as I can. And right now, there's no devices. There are no devices that support Vulkan but do not support either OpenGL or Metal. So right now, Vulkan is not on the list, is not on the top priority list, because I want to focus on supporting as much devices as I can. And after that, like when all the devices will be supported, I would like to increase performance on some of the devices. But it's not the top priority for me, because I want to use it not for AAA super efficient games, but for some relatively small indie games. Like the Zemerod game is a good example. It's a tactical game with like 2D sprites rendering, and it's really important to run it on everything, but it's not really important how efficient it is. It is important, but like, we do not really need all the Vulkan things to run it. So I'm more focused on Metal and OpenGL.
Yeah, I guess it's like one of the things that when you're sort of developing libraries in the open, doing open source, that it's quite difficult to try and support everybody. So you create a games engine and people are immediately creating lots of different types of games, and you must get so many feature requests and issues come in on GitHub. And it's hard to try and then focus things. And if you've got a clear mandate of we're trying to support as many devices as possible, and here's the feature set, and this is kind of like where we are with our core set, is that a challenge at times for you to ride that balance between providing as many features as you can, but not bloating your engine to a point where it's actually becomes quite long time to compile, take a long time to compile, and you end up with so many features that it becomes difficult to maintain the code base?
Yes, absolutely. It's a really tough balance. And I think that I found a niche that is not really filled in Rust, because like the next API I want to implement is an old version of OpenGL, like OpenGL ES2 and OpenGL, yeah, like the older versions of OpenGL. And most other game engines are focused primarily on the high performance, like computers. And I guess like games that need like that high performance, like some AAA shooters or something like that. And I really want to support like, as many devices as I can with a little limited feature set. And I really want the, exactly the same code works on everything. So it's really tough balance. Like I can't include some of the features because they are not supported on some, like, I don't know, on WebGL 1, for example.
Do you have like a, is it just yourself developing this? Like, or do you have like a core team? Like, talk to me about how, if I wanted to contribute to MacroQuad, is there a sort of feature set? Is there bugs that I can pick up? And who looks at the pull request and decides what goes in and what doesn't?
Right now, I'm the only one who like have the button to merge pull requests. However, we have quite an active community on Discord, and a lot of people do some things with MacroQuad or in MacroQuad. So I think if you want to contribute, the best way to contribute actually is just making a game and like show the world that it's cool to make a game with MacroQuad. And I guess you will find some issues along the way, and then you will need somehow to address those issues, either by like issue talking on Discord or making pull requests. So that's how I see the perfect contribution to MacroQuad.
That's great. Is it something you're working on as a full-time job, or is it a part-time thing at the moment?
I would say it's almost full-time. I still have a little bit of contracts outside of like, Quad, but there are actually even on my like freelancing contracts, I still use a little bit of MiniQuad, so it's all kind of connected to MiniQuad. But it's, I think it's like 80% of my like all time.
That's great. Just being able to like work in Rust that amount of time is
a
joy.
Pretty cool. It's like I'm really privileged to work so much on Rust and Rust and the games and Rust.
Yeah, and you've got a platinum sponsor on board in Bark Studio, who they're using Rust in one of their projects, from what I can gather.
Yeah,
that says a bit more, bit about how that came around.
Yeah, like Embark are my platinum sponsors, and what is really really cool is that Embark is not my 100% sponsors, just individual contributors to both GitHub sponsor and Patreon is like, I don't know, it's almost comparable to the Embark contribution, and that's super cool. Both facts that Embark is supporting me and a lot of people supports me, I'm really thankful about like, both. So actually, I didn't know what Embark is doing with MiniQuad. I guess they're not doing anything with it. They just found it cool and they support me. I don't know. I actually never talked to them, so I don't know. But I'm really thankful, and it's like super cool.
Yeah, I think it's super cool that even just like supporting people in the community. I try and donate to projects as much as possible where I just find something that's actually just really cool and think like, you know, people work in open source and it can be quite a thankless task at times because you spend your life working on some tool or some engine and it's a bit of a passion project for you and you put it into the world and people start to use it and then people start to file issues and suddenly your workload gets crazy and you're not being paid for it and then people complain or people have opinions on where what direction things should go in and suddenly you know you kind of snowed under and actually it could be quite an underappreciated thankless task at times, so it's quite nice when somebody recognizes and actually you know gives you that encouragement and support. Does that kind of thing motivate you more, you know, in the times when you find it really difficult and you're a bit snowed under, that actually having those people contributing to your project, it, you know, financially and in terms of like encouraging GitHub pull requests and things. Does that help motivate you?
Oh yes, absolutely. It's like I have a lot of problems with motivation, with like, I don't know, imposter syndrome. Like sometimes I question a lot, like what I'm doing, like why? Just the fact that someone is using it or contributing somehow, it's some sort of validation that like I'm doing the right thing. It's really important. It's like even like the smallest contribution ever, like gives me motivation for, I don't know, for weeks. It's super cool. It's like I don't know. I'm super happy about all the contributions I got. It's very, very important for me. And actually, Embark is like the very cool company. It's, I don't know. I think that most of Rust ecosystem is somehow sponsored by Embark. It's amazing. I don't know. It's so cool.
Yeah, they're really cool. It's so good to see that companies are really getting behind the Rust language. I mean, like, I know we're quite early on in terms of other languages, even though Rust has been around for years, but like it's super cool to see, you know, people really starting to get on board with it and support, you know, tools about it, because it's so perfect for games development in particular. Like, it's such a great language and a great alternative to C++.
Yes, absolutely.
So are you working on games as well? Like, is MacroQuad got to the point where actually it just consumes all of your time so much so that you can't make games anymore, or are you still making games on the side?
Yes, I'm making games, and right now I got that GitHub story started like not so far ago, like 2 months ago, I think, 3 months ago, and I'm trying to reinvest all that money to build a game. Like that's my plan with that money, with that I got some kind of power to build a game. And now I'm really trying to like finish my own game, because I believe that finished game released on different platforms is the best way to advertise an engine, and also to validate that the engine actually works. So I'm trying to spend a lot of time on the game. And sometimes I even sacrifice a little bit of like some maintainer work towards working on the game, because I think it's like the most important thing. And the way I'm working on my game, I'm doing a small, relatively small platformer game now. I want to release it on like all kinds of platforms, just to see how it works on like mobile stores and Steam. And along the way, I'm writing some sort of a book. Like I'm collecting all the like things I did, and I write them to the book, how to make a platformer game. So I want to both publish a game and publish a book of how to make exactly the same game. And also I want to publish all the materials, all the assets for that game to allow people to modify the sources and basically publish the very same game legally with all the permissive licenses on everything. So that's my plan on the game I'm working on right now.
That's super exciting. It's like you're getting donations from the community, you're reinvesting it into a game which makes the engine better.
Yep.
Because you're kind of testing its legs in the real world. And also on top of that, you're going to take that game and then create a book and release all the assets and source code so people can learn from it. That's amazing. I really, really love that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the game? Or is it a bit too early?
No, it's like, it's okay. The draft of the book are available somewhere on GitHub, on Twitter, I don't know. It's a platformer game. It's a story-based platformer game. So I have a story that I want to tell, and it's going to be narrated with a platformer game, with how it's called, precision platformer. So I took a lot from Celeste, the game Celeste. It's an amazing game, and the authors of Celeste made tons of blog posts. They open sourced like some core classes in C#, and I'm trying to take a lot from this to learn a lot how like make successful games from from Celeste. So yeah, it's precision platformer with some story, with some art, with some cutscenes, and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be a real game.
Sounds like it. Do you, as you're developing the game, do you find that there's features that will come up and you're like, I need to actually get this into the engine so everybody else can use it, like UI stuff, maybe sound?
Yeah, I use the game as a driver for the features of the engine. So I actually develop the game first, and then when something is missing from the, like, that I need something for the game, I add this to the engine. I usually, there are two sources of the features. First is someone asked me, like someone do some other games on Discord or on GitHub, and they ask for features. Like I need this to move forward, and then I add those features, or I'm doing my game, and when I feel like the lack of some features, I add those features. I almost never add features just because I want to add some features, because it's really tempting, but it's really nice to add features when you do not have a real use case for them, because you do not need to like make them really usable. And so I'm trying to avoid this.
Yeah, I find that with things like entity component systems and things like that, that actually, does an entity component system belong in the engine, or is it something that's actually a bit more personal to the use case and the developer that's working on the game? You know, should if you use a macro quad, do you like say you should use this our own ECS engine, or you know, do I leave it open for developers? And I always kind of feel that tying some of these libraries into the engine is unnecessary. Do you ever feel the same when you're kind of developing these things?
Sort of. I do not have any ECS in MacroQuad, so I let users choose the ECS. However, I have some plans on it, and I have some views on ECS for that kind of games, and I do not really think that the real ECS is a necessity for some small indie games, but I have a long record of dealing with different ECSs in Rust, so it's like, it's a long story. I can elaborate on this, but it's like, I don't know, a lot of libraries I made, I used, and
yeah, I think you can end up bloating something when it's sometimes not necessary, and that you can actually just leave, you know, here's the bare tools that you need, and it's super fast and super focused. And actually, you know, if you want an ECS design, then go and use an ECS library, and you can incorporate it with our engine and use the two side by side. But if you don't want to use ECS, then you don't have to either, and you haven't got all of this ECS stuff compiled in that's not even needed, you know. I think that's like super important. And but that's not to knock any engine that does have ECS in, because sometimes it's just super convenient to, or you may not even be aware of that these design mechanisms exist. And when you're actually using an engine and they have that baked in, that when you use them, you're like, oh yeah, this is super cool. Or yeah, it's really, really interesting. So tell us about some of the core components in MacroQuad. So you've got UI, audio, graphics. Is that, just give us a quick rundown of some of the components in the engine.
Okay. So MacroQuad is actually a tiny layer on top of a mini quad. And the first thing I made in MacroQuad is just a main loop organization. Like I'm in MiniQuad and in most other platforming APIs, we have some events coming from the platform, like draw callback and like update callback. And in MacroQuad, I managed to do just a loop. And that loop it works on all the platforms. And I was really excited about it. And it was a starting point for MacroQuad. It's the way that MacroQuad made possible to organize game code in the form of loop. And it was really challenging because on the web, you can't really block. So all the calls from JavaScript should be non-blocking. And then one giant loop is obviously very blocking. So it was a challenge. And I managed to solve it with some really weird techniques. And on top of that, I added some pretty simple drawing primitives inspired by Raylib. So it's, I would call it two major points, like the code organization and the Raylib style drawing primitives. It was the core of MacroQuad. Later on, I experimented with async a lot, and for the game, I use coroutines a lot. It's a way to kind of build state machines in async code, and it's also part of MacroQuad right now. And for UI, yeah, we have some UI. We have some immediate mode library for UI, but it's mostly for development UI, not for production UI, not for the game UI. But yeah, we have a special for MacroQuad library that it's super tiny and it can draw some simple things. I think that's basically it.
Is that something you want to expand more upon? Like, what does your version one of the engine look like? Is there like certain features that you kind of really want to get in before you call it version one? Completely stable, you know, or are you quite happy with it at the moment, and you're not kind of planning on adding any new big features?
There are quite a lot of features that I'm missing. I would call it version one when we will have some certain games that I want to be able to be developed with MacroQuad. Last month, I added particle effects like with the editor. So I added particle editors, effects editor, and I want to add a couple of other editors for MacroQuad. Like animation editor. I would like to make like animation graph for like 2D animations, for 3D animations. I would like to add animations, a UI, some sort of in-game UI, and some other things that always needed for certain games. And I have a list of games in my mind that I would like to be easy to make in MacroQuad. And that includes some low-poly 3D games, it includes some 2D games, it includes pixel art games, it includes some like vectors kind of games, like this. It's like with 2D skeletal animations. So yeah, I have a list of games, and when MacroQuad will have features for all of those games, I will be happy and I will call it like done.
So currently you've got like you're on version 0.3.
Yep.
What does the next version of the library look like?
Right now it's 0.3 alpha, and the next milestone that should happen super soon is to release that 0.3 alpha as 0.3, because I already have like a major API changes in mind. So I need to finish 0.3 and start 0.4. And for 0.4, the main thing and the reason that those API changes are going to be implemented is low poly 3D graphics. So that's my plans for 0.4. There is an upcoming game that's going to use MacroQuad, and it's going to be a low poly graphics game. Like, it's going to be from the author of Xemeroad, it's going to be the next game. I don't know, it's spoilers, but they're going to work on a low poly 3D game, and they want to help on that game. So 0.4, I think, would be mostly about low-poly 3D graphics and some animations, some skeletal animations, some editors for the animations. So that's going to be about 0.4.
So with being a minor version, people can obviously expect like breaking API changes.
Yep.
Is this something that you kind of have in the back of your mind that, you know, sometimes you want to add something or change something and you realize, actually, this is going to go and break everybody's projects? that's currently using the current version? Or is it, do you try and keep it as stable as possible, you know, and kind of bolt on top of it? How do you make those decisions?
I'm kind of in the middle. I actually break things a lot. I break things all the time, but I'm trying to not break too much things. I have an excuse that we are like in 0.3 alpha, so it's alpha, so we are free to break things. However, I'm trying to draw a line between being like unusable because of too many changes and being like, doesn't have a freedom to change things I really want to fix. So I'm kind of in the middle. Like right now, with that big API changes I have in mind, I realize that it's not going to fit in 0.3 because it will break too many things. So I need to go for the next version. So that's it. That's a balance.
Do you communicate those?
Yeah, I do. We have discussions about it on Discord all the time. And usually people approve the changes I want to make. Usually they're quite happy because like it's going to be... Like most changes I do when I break the API, they're actually good. So usually people are fine with that. Usually.
So this is fine. I'm receptive to this change. It's an improvement.
Yeah, it's an improvement, usually.
So when can we expect the book? And is that something you're planning for next year? I know it's hesitant to put deadlines or timelines on things, but is it something you're planning to have done? Because these resources are so important in the ecosystem right now. You know, I know Herbert Wolverston, who does the Bracket Lib, he's released a book based on his tutorial series, which is so good. And I learned so much about Rust and some things around lifetimes that I kind of hadn't wrapped my head around just by reading his documentation on creating that roguelike. Is it something you're planning on doing in the next year? Is it going to be a slightly longer than that? Not to put you on the spot.
I would really like to finish it as soon as possible. I definitely do not want to take another year for this. And the game is actually already playable and it's quite close to some sort of release. So I would really like to release at least a demo on some platforms, like free demo on Steam or something like that. I would really like to make it like, really soon, like next month maybe in 2 months. And I'm updating the book all the time, so like I have a plan for the next chapter, like for the next week, so it's updating. And I have all the drafts available, so it's already some sort of documentation for MacroQuad, I guess.
That's great. So do you also spend time writing tutorials for like the new features that are coming into MacroQuad and existing things and sort of refining those as well as the book? Or is the book going to act as a kind of full deep dive tutorial into using MacroQuad and Rust? Are you going to kind of do both simultaneously?
The book should be the tutorial. The book should be a comprehensive tutorial on all the features in MacroQuad, and it should be that tutorial. However, right now I have a really huge lack of documentation and tutorials. I have plenty of examples, but like it's poorly documented examples, and I do not have enough tutorials, and like, onboarding experience is painful. So that's a problem, and I do have a lot of libraries around MacroQuad that are not documented at all or poorly maintained. Like I have a sound library that is not maintained at all because like, I don't know, I just don't have time and like, I did not went to this yet. I have a plan for this, but the library is available and people tries to use it and they found bugs and I'm like, I don't know. And I have plenty of those libraries that are not really well maintained, and I'm like, I feel bad about it, but I need to focus on like some things. So I'm trying to maintain MiniQuad and MacroQuad all the time. Like I'm trying to fix all the bugs people found, like support them. But there are a lot of libraries that I can't really do it. So like network library, like tiled loader, a lot of things that are not that maintained. And so I have other things to do.
So what's the some ways that the Rust community can support you right now? So would that be people developing games, tutorials, or contributing donations, helping with GitHub reviews, logging issues? What are some of the big things for you right now that would really help you take MacroQuad to the next version and the next level?
I honestly believe that making games in MacroQuad is the best way to move it forward. And other than that, there are really huge lack of documentation, tutorials, articles, blog posts. So, and I'm really bad at writing. Like, as you may notice, my English is not that good, and it takes a lot of time to write correct English sentences. And that's a huge problem for me, because just writing things is really complicated for me. So if someone wants to contribute, the way to do it is just find a library that's not documented, and or when the documentation is bad, or when it's, I don't know, just not correct English, and help with that. There are a lot of libraries like this.
I think we should do a MacroQuad game jam. And we should get as many games in a 1 month period written in MacroQuad, and we'll just, as a community, we'll just smash through it. And
yeah, absolutely. It's a good idea.
I think some of that would be really cool. I think there should be more Rust game jams going on to really kind of push the community forward.
Yeah, I really try to make MacroQuad the way that doesn't really require you to know Rust. I really want people from outside of Rust enjoy doing games in MacroQuad. One of the goals with MacroQuad is do it available for small game jams for not Rust people. You can just start using MacroQuad right away without learning anything about Rust. And that's the thing, that it's very game jam friendly.
Yeah, I think that this something that's super important is that, you know, when you're coming to a new language, like every time I pick up a new language, I the first thing I do is I work on a project, a simple project that will kind of flex my skills in that language. So I'll just pick maybe like a roguelike. And so every new language I pick up, I'll write a roguelike in that language. And that kind of gives you an overview of, you know, data structures and syntax and things like that. And Rust can be quite a scary language to pick up at first, you know, because there's kind of things, there's concepts and that you might not find in other languages, especially if you're coming from a scripting language like JavaScript or Python or Ruby. There'll be concepts that are completely new to you. And I think that being able to do a games tutorial that not only introduces, you know, a framework, but also kind of explains things around the language and does that in a really fun way is super important. Those kind of tools are really cool.
Yes, and that's my plan. That's my real plan for the game. That's why I'm doing that genre of the game, because I want that game to be fun and kind of popular. And I want people, just the gamers that want to play that game, I want them to try to mod the game, to modify the game somehow. So it's a very specific genre, and in that genre there are not much of open source moddable games, and they want to, and they mix communities of people who like precision platformers, and they want to introduce them to Rust, because they will find the game nice and they will want to modify the game, and then they will find that, oh, there is a book, and let's check it out. And that way, I think I will be able to bring a little bit of people from outside of Rust to Rust through the games. Because right now, most people who do game development in Rust, they came for Rust. That came, their first interest is to learn Rust and to try Rust. And I want to bring people with some other interests. I want to make that game, so what's the list of the games that I can take? Oh, I have one open source game with a book. Okay, oh, it's in Rust. Okay, I need to learn Rust. So that's my plan, to attract people to Rust.
Rust is really great at that. And I think that my mental way of working doesn't work well with things like Unity and Godot. Like, I don't, they have a very kind of interface centric artsy kind of view to the world and to your development, and like it's kind of more using this tool to create games, whereas I'm kind of a bit more familiar with just Vim and code and being a bit sort of lower level than that, because I just can't get, I'm not an artist, and like the artistic sort of flow of click and drag components around, and you know, here's your game objects and here's your world and stuff, like it doesn't fit my mental model as well. And I think that there's probably a lot of people out there, because it's in the community, as soon as we talk about games dev, you know, recommend how I get into games dev, everybody will say use Unity, use Godot, use Game Maker or some other engine, and they're all really great and they're amazing, and like especially if your mind works that way and you love to, you know, kind of use a creative app to develop stuff, and as well as code, you know. But like if you're somebody who's just like, I just like to write code and see it compile, and you know, those kind of apps and engines are potentially not as good a fit for you. And I think like if we can have those tools that are available where, you know, people that doesn't quite fit their mental model, or they want to get a bit lower level, or they want stuff that's not 7 gig for a simple Hello World game, and is super performant, that's accessible as well.
Yeah, that's very true. I totally agree. Yeah, that's the thing about accessibility in games, like in game development. The first way to kind of include people to game development is to simplify the workflow and make it visual and like hide all the implementation details and just give people some interface and give it as a black box. Like it's a black box, you have no idea what's inside, but the interface is simple. And that's one way to include people to game development, and that's nice. However, I'm a huge believer that we can go another way, and we can make the internal simple, and we can show that there's no like different things, like from the lowest level, and you can go to the lowest level and it still be understandable and simple, and we can build the libraries the way that it just makes it simple from the very beginning. And I think it's possible, and I think we can do it. Like we can build the like platforms, libraries. We can show the people how it actually works from the lowest level, however, still being accessible and easy to use. And that's what I want to achieve.
Yeah, like when you're using an engine, you can sometimes be so abstracted away from the implementation that you hit a bottleneck and you have no idea why, you know, because you've kind of followed some code online and you're building something in Unity, and then you've got a huge frame rate drop and you have no idea why. Whereas when you're a bit closer to the code, you can kind of understand, oh yeah, I've got all of these NPCs that are calculating A star, and you know, maybe that's where the bottleneck is, and you kind of you have a better understanding of the fundamentals of actually, I don't click these things together and it works. It's I understand why this works as well as how I do this. So that understanding of the why as well as the how is super important. And it gives you such an advantage when you come to do development that you can kind of understand, I have this bottleneck and I instinctively know, and I can dive in and fix, you know, even with MacroQuad, it's like you can go and fork the library, find out actually there's something in the engine, there's a bug in the engine, or there's something that's not as performant as it could be, and again, it's a bit of pull request. Whereas like with something like Unity, that's pretty difficult because you're kind of at the mercy of the developers at Unity.
Yep. And it's not only about open source. Like even if Unity will be completely open source, it's still going to be a really huge problem to like make a pull request, because I think it's because of the approach. Like your Unity approach is to hide the complexity, while I think we can show the problem first. Like I don't know, the problem is showing a window on the screen, and you have like X, Wayland and stuff like that, and then you have like tools to make that works. And when you know the problem and you use the tool, it's very different from the approach when you just have the solution without knowing the problem. However, I believe we still can make it super easy to use. The same level of easiness. Like, we can give people editors, we can give people like visual things, but we can like show the problem. And I believe it's really important to explain what the problem is. Because when you know when what is the problem, you can send a pull request. Like, it's I don't know, it's some problem with JavaScript interop, and you really know how the JavaScript interop works, and you have some helpers to like make it simpler. In contrast with some tools that do it for you, and you do not really know how it works. So that's, I don't know, that's some ideology.
I agree. Absolutely. I think it's a real strength of Rust, and the Rust community, like, is so helpful in terms of, you know, doesn't appear to be many gatekeepers, especially in the Rust games development community, where, you know, kind of pushing people down for asking simple questions. Everyone's really helpful. I think there can be like a real strength in our community that we can, you know, not only explain these concepts, but explain why they are working the way they are, and the theory behind things as much as, you know, the implementation of things. Fedor, it's been amazing to have you on the show. I'm super excited for Macro Quad. We'll definitely get you back on in the future to chat about the book a bit more.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me here.